Hey mamas, it's Megan here from the VBAC Link. You know how finding the right VBAC supportive provider can truly make all the difference. Well, finding the right diaper is sometimes just as tough. When searching for a supportive provider, check out our supportive provider list linked in the show notes. And when searching for quality diapers made with clean ingredients, reach out to Coterie. Their diapers are ultra absorbent, they can help minimize leaks and diaper rash, and are made with clean, hypoallergenic materials. It's one less thing to stress about. Use code VBAC20, that's VBAC20, at checkout to get 20% off your order of $40 or more. You can find them by checking out the link in the show notes or going to coterie.com. That's coterie.com.
All right. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. It is Julie here today with the VBAC Link podcast, and I'm really excited about our story today. I have with me Ambrosia. It's Ambrosia? Is that how you say it?
Yes.
Okay, good. I didn't want to go the whole episode without saying your name wrong. Okay, we have Ambrosia, and I'm really excited because today we have a VBAC after two C-section story. I love especially these stories. Her first pregnancy was a teen pregnancy, and I am really interested in hearing her experience about that because I know that it's a very unique circumstance and a very different journey as a teenager, and there's unique challenges associated with that. So I'm excited to hear more about that and about all of her journey through all of her births. But before I do that, I'm going to share a review of the week. This one is a throwback to 2020. I was looking through our spreadsheet and saw that we haven't done that one yet. So I'm going to throw all the way back almost 4 years ago. And this review was on Apple Podcasts, and it says, Megan and Julie and the women sharing their birth stories are amazing. They share real life stories of all kinds of births and helpful, useful, practical information that has really helped me feel prepared for my VBAC, which I hope will happen very soon. I highly recommend listening to this podcast to be informed and encouraged. I also highly recommend their online VBAC course. It's self-paced and offers so much valuable information and good resources. It has really helped me feel ready and empowered to birth my baby. Thank you for all you awesome ladies do for women and the birth world. And I will say thank you so much for sharing your review. And if you haven't already, take some time, pause the podcast right now, go ahead and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. And we might just be reading your review on the podcast one day.
Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after two C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional.
All right, let's get back to it. I'm really excited to meet Ambrosia today and hear her stories. Ambrosia is a 27-year-old mother of three boys. Boy mom, that's super exciting. Yes. Ages 11, 5, and 1 month. I'm really excited to hear, especially about a fresh VBAC after two C-section story. She's from El Paso, Texas, and she is very excited to share her story with us today. So Ambrosia, why don't you go ahead and share your journey to VBAC after two C-sections with us?
Cool. So I'll start off with my first pregnancy. So I got pregnant at about 16, and with that, just wanted to mention, I wasn't really raised by my mom. I had my grandma in my life, most of my life since I was, two. So with her, I had a lot of freedom with her, in a sense. So I did fall pregnant very, very young. But she did support me in, so many ways. She helped me out through all of my pregnancy, but it was more, providing shelter and food and stuff like that. But when it came down to me knowing what to do, that wasn't really a thing. So I found myself like watching YouTube a lot, kind of getting my information from the internet, but like still I was just completely naive to what birth was and all of that. So I just went straight off of what my doctor would tell me. So once I did find out that I was pregnant, I chose a doctor and didn't really do any research with that. I just chose a female because that's who I was more comfortable with. But like little did I know, the doctor that I did choose, she was, well, from what I've heard around El Paso, I guess, like from other women and their experiences and doctors too, they were like, oh, she's really, really good at C-sections. Like she's like one of the top like ladies that you would want to have to do your C-section because she's really good at it. That was later on that I figured that out, but like at the time I was just like, however my baby comes out is how it comes out, but I did want to have like a vaginal birth. Like I didn't want to do no surgeries, nothing, because I've never even broke a bone in my body. So just the thought of surgery kind of scared me. So my first visit with her was good, but she automatically told me like, your pelvis is too like narrow. You won't be able to push your baby out. There's a chance that like he could get stuck and this and that. So I was just, and I had my grandma with me. So we just kind of gave each other that look like, oh, well, whatever's best, you know? So I ended up having a C-section with him. And when I was getting my C-section, so she schedules the C-sections, right? And then when that day that I got it, after everything was done, she mentioned to me, she's like, you want more kids, right? And I told her, well, of course. And she told me, like, well, if you wait a couple years, like at least 1 to 2, or like 2, something like that, 2.5 years, then you could have a vaginal birth if you would still want that.
That
So
is so
that.
funny. Hold on. Can I interrupt for a second?
Yeah, of course, of
I'm
course.
so sorry. I think it's
You're
so
fine.
funny that she told you that after she told you your pelvis was too small.
Exactly,
Like,
like
isn't that silly? Anyways, we're going to talk more about that at
it
the end of the episode, but I just had to call attention to that. Anyway, sorry. Keep going. Thank you.
You're okay. Yeah, I thought that was weird too, 'cause it's just knowing what I know now, I know that a lot of doctors get more money in a sense out of the C-sections rather than like a vaginal birth. So I'm like, yeah, that's probably why. And like not necessarily that, but just it's more convenient for them, they don't have to really wait around and whatnot. So yeah, and then with my second pregnancy, my son was already about 5, 6 years old, and so I was like, well, of course I can. I was pretty excited. Like, I did want to push for a vaginal birth, but I did end up going back to her for that pregnancy, which I should have known better, but honestly, I didn't know really how to advocate for myself still because I was 21. So I feel like I just wasn't adamant enough. Like, I didn't have that confidence yet to like be like, no, this is what I want. Like, I don't want another C-section. Like, this is what I want. So I kind of just, I would mention it to her that like almost every appointment, I'd be like, well, with the first initial appointment, I told her I do want to try for, a VBAC. And she's like, well, yeah, we can talk about that like in your next appointments. But like as I kept going back for my appointments, she was just kind of like, it's just like an in and out type of thing, kind of transactional experiences, just, trying to see if you're healthy and whatnot. But I started noticing at around like 20 weeks pregnant that my hands would feel pretty like weird. They would feel kind of stiff and a little swollen, and I started getting like very, very swollen. And I worked full time. I'm a nail technician, and so I work at a spa full time, or I did at that time too. So I thought like maybe it's just like stress from work or, normal pregnancy symptoms, but I started feeling that swollen, very noticeably swollen. I would see a lot of like flashes, like little stars just kind of floating, like bad headaches. And towards the end of my pregnancy, I would start feeling like indigestion. So it like depending on what I ate, like I thought it just wasn't sitting right in my stomach, and sometimes I would end up vomiting. But at the time, I just thought, oh, this is like just normal pregnancy symptoms or whatever. But knowing what I know now, I'm like, no, that was definitely signs of preeclampsia. But the thing is, like at every doctor's appointment that I would go in for, my blood pressure was always like normal. So it was pretty weird that like I had that. And I would tell my doctor, I'd be like, hey girl, like I'm pretty swollen, and like I don't really feel like myself. Like obviously you're not gonna feel like yourself with pregnancy, but I felt like not what I felt with my first pregnancy. It was just so, it didn't feel good at all. So she looks at me and she goes, oh no, yeah, I mean you're swollen, but people, you're also very like slim, like because I am very skinny like naturally. But she's like, maybe your family isn't used to seeing you like pregnant, So I was like, I don't think that's what it is, but okay. Again, like me being like not very adamant about like sticking up for myself in a sense, like, no, I don't think this is, right. So I just told her, I was like, okay, like we'll keep seeing. So I kept going for my appointments, and at like 38 weeks, I had one of my appointments, and then I was feeling like super bad. So that's when I was just like, no, like I really don't feel good. Like I'm very swollen. And she told me during that appointment, she's like, yeah, I mean, you look a little more swollen than usual. I'll have you go like across to the hospital to get some blood work done. So I was like, okay. So I went. I remember telling my grandma at the time, like, it's like she wants me to go do some blood work, and she just kind of gave me that look like, I don't know. Like she kind of knew something that I was like blindsided to. So I was like, yeah, I'm just gonna go get this blood work done real quick. And I took my son with me, and then she ended up having to come pick him up again because I had to be admitted, and they wanted to like monitor me. So she came and picked up my son, and then I went in, got the blood work done. They took a urine sample, and then like a couple hours later, they're like, oh yeah, like you have preeclampsia. So I was like, ooh, no. And I kind of knew like it was that because I did a little bit of research, but at the same time, I didn't want to like self-diagnose myself either. I was like, I don't want to like say this is what it is when it really isn't. But I did a little bit of research, and every symptom that I had, it was matching up to that. And so when they told me that, I was like, hi, I knew it at, like in a sense, but I didn't really advocate for myself. I was just like, no, like maybe it's normal. They did find protein in the urine too. So with that, I feel like since she found out, she was like, oh no, like we have to do the C-section tonight. Like there's no way. And it was around 4 or 5 when I went in, and then at around 12, that's when they 11, 12 at night, that's when they started the C-section. But I was like, oh my God. And when they did the ultrasound, my baby's head was down. So I was like, oh, like I kind of wanted to go through with like a vaginal, but and I was already a centimeter dilated too, I should mention that. I didn't want to do a vaginal, but she just kept kind of saying like, no, since you have preeclampsia, like there's no way like we can do a natural delivery. Like you can You can start having seizures and that, like your body's already under stress. Like, we just need to get your baby out now. So I was like, okay. I ended up like having to do another repeat C-section, but I felt like she just kind of put the like blame on the preeclampsia for the C-section. And then she has like the audacity to say, oh, it's a good thing I caught this right away. Like, it's a good thing I caught this. And I'm like, well, if you,
Oh my gosh. Oh, you were
yes.
trying to tell her.
Like, the whole, almost the whole pregnancy, like, I don't feel good. This is not really normal. And then, right when I finally, like, told her again, that's when she was like, oh, I'm so glad I caught this. I was like, girl, like, no, if I wouldn't have told you, who knows? Who knows how the rest of the pregnancy would have gone, you know? Like, but it was wild to me. That really, like, kind of struck me right there. So I was just like, like, if I ever got pregnant again, I would not go back to her. And so, well, thankfully, my son. He was good. He was born healthy. He did have to do a little NICU stay for a while just because he was under stress. And once he was born, like, they said he was kind of grunting a little, like having trouble breathing. So he did go into the NICU for a little bit, by 4 or 5 days. But that whole experience, it was just like, it was hard. It was really hard to go through with the NICU stay, having a C-section, and then walking back and forth to the NICU, breastfeeding. It was also my first time like breastfeeding, because when I was 16, like, I didn't have any guidance really. Like, my grandma never breastfed, my great grandma had never breastfed, my mom didn't breastfeed, so it was just like I was just new to the whole experience. I didn't have a lot of people to help me out with that. My mother-in-law, she did breastfeed. She tried to help me, but I was just like, it was new for me. So I was like, I don't even know. And I was still kind of like shy in a sense. Like, I was like, oh, like, people seeing like every aspect of me was just like, it was kind of weird. But I ended up like breastfeeding my second for up to 3 years. So that was a really like, that was the one thing that I took from all of that, that I was like, wow, like, it's a super nice, like, bonding experience. But at the time, like, learning how to do it under, like, the stress from having the C-section and all that, it was just so much. But I stuck through that, and I was really proud of myself at that time, 'cause, yeah, I had no guidance or anything with my first. And I mean, I did want to breastfeed, but I just didn't know. I thought they were born like and they already knew how to like latch and all that.
I know. Sometimes it's hard work, for sure.
Yeah, I didn't know it was a learning experience for like the baby and mom to like breastfeed and stuff. So that I kind of missed out with on my first, and a lot of other things. So it was nice. But that's what happened with my second.
So earlier we talked about how Coterie diapers are incredibly absorbent and minimize leaks. But let me tell you a little bit about their comfort. These diapers are made with ultra soft apparel grade materials that can help keep your baby comfortable all day and night. You will feel the difference. Well, your baby will also feel the difference. Plus, the hypoallergenic and free of fragrance dyes and other irritants keep them safe for even the most sensitive skin. Pair that with their seamless subscription service when you can adjust orders via text, and you have the diapering solution that can truly make your life easier. Use code VBAC20, that's VBAC20, at checkout and save 20% off your first order of $40 or more, and experience what we're raving about.
So from that point on, I was like, no, like, if I get pregnant again, I'm going to have a vaginal birth. Like, there's no way that my pelvis is too small, or like, I already knew in the back of my mind, like, that all that was just like kind of like noise to me. Like, it wasn't anything. And I already knew like VBACs were possible just because my mom, she ended up having a C-section with my brother. And then with me and my sister, she had us vaginally. So I knew it was possible and that people can do it, but it's just, finding the right provider that actually wants to kind of like take that on, and support you like through every step of the way, like it was another thing, especially kind of from where I am from here in El Paso, because most of the hospitals they'll just kind of push and push. So when this time around, when I did get pregnant, I was like, okay, like we're not doing that again. I'm not going back to her. I did all my research and even spoke to some of my clients that, because I don't know, 2024 was a really weird year where it just like it seemed like everyone was pregnant in a sense. I was like, oh my God, like a lot of my friends were pregnant, my clients, like celebrities that I would even see. Like, I'm like, okay, yeah, everyone is pregnant around here. So I would even ask some of my clients who their doctor was and like what they were doing in a sense, like as far as like birth, like natural C-section. One of them just like, she's like, oh, I had all of my baby's C-sections and that's what I'm gonna keep doing because I guess it was more convenient for her. So I was like, oh yeah, that's good for you, but like that's not what I want. And another one, she was telling me that she also wanted a VBAC too because she had a C-section with her first, and then for her second, she's like, she was going to Texas Tech University. It's like, I guess it's like a hospital that, they also have like the students there too, Texas Tech. So she said she was going there and that they had like OBGYNs, midwives there too. And she's like, one of the midwives that I'm seeing is like totally on board with me having a VBAC. And she's like, you should go to her. And I was like, okay, but I don't know what happened with like the scheduling. I didn't get her midwife, so I ended up getting scheduled with OBGYN. And when I went to that first appointment, she like did an exam and everything, and she's like, "Oh no, yeah, like your pelvis is too narrow." And I was like, "Oh my God!" Like, and that kind of discouraged me a lot because I was like, "Oh my God!" Like, I felt like I wasn't gonna find anybody that was VBAC supportive. And then two again, like I felt a little bit more comfortable just with like a female, so I was kind of limiting my search in a sense. I was just kind of looking for female doctors or midwives that would, do VBACs. And then I kind of searched around birth centers, but the idea of that kind of like did freak me out because I was the one that I was looking at, one of them, they don't necessarily let you, I guess, get an epidural. Like it's like natural, like totally natural. And I was like, I don't know if I could do all that. Like it just kind of freaked me out. So I was like, I don't know if I can do that. Like, what if I'm like in like so much pain? So that one too was kind of not an option for me like at the time. So I ended up just Googling like VBAC, and then a doctor in my area did pop up. And when I clicked on the website, it showed him being like it's like just kind of like blasted all over his site, like VBAC, like vaginal birth after cesarean is possible. And it was just really like positive. Like he had a really good success rate of VBACs and even VBACs after two C-sections, because like after two C-sections people are a little more like, I don't know what it is, like people are, doctors necessarily are a little bit more, I guess, timid in the sense if they want to like take that on or not. So that so I found him, but I was also like, oh, but it's a guy, like I don't know how this is gonna like work or anything. But me just being so adamant and wanting the vaginal birth just because I knew in my heart like I can do this, like This is, I'm not too narrow or small. I am a petite woman, but I am not like tiny. So I knew it. I knew I could do it. So I ended up just trying him out. So I went to my first appointment with him, and then everything was pretty good. Like he wasn't like invasive either. Like he just kind of like looked at me. He's like, "So what are you wanting for this birth?" And I told him a VBAC, and he's like, "Okay." He's like, "And you've had two previous C-sections?" And I was like, "Yep, two C-sections." And then he's like, "And the reason for like the C-sections?" And I was like, "The first one, basically, like no reason at all, just because the doctor thought I was like, I'm too narrow, like my pelvis is too narrow." He's like, and he kind of like chuckled. He was like, "Oh, okay." And then he's like, "And the second one?" And I was like, she kind of blamed it on preeclampsia in a sense, which I feel like she really did, but who knows? I mean, maybe I know it has its risks and all that, like doing a vaginal with preeclampsia, but she just wasn't willing to take those in a sense. So I told him, and he was like, "Okay." And then he just was like, "Yeah." He measured my stomach and all that. He didn't do like those, like the pap smears or anything. He wasn't like invasive. He's like, "There's no need for me to like check and see and all that, you know." And that's what the doctor over there at Texas Tech did. Like right away, she's like she like stuck her fingers in me, and she's like, "Oh no, yeah." I'm like, "No, you're too narrow." And I'm like, "Oh my God." So he didn't do none of that. Like he just looked at me. He's like, "Yeah, you're petite, but I mean, you're not tiny." So he's like, "I think it's possible." Like he gave me a lot of like reassurance in a sense. And so I just kept going back and back. And every visit was real like fast, simple. He didn't really didn't say much. My pregnancy was pretty healthy. No preeclampsia this time, which was really good because I was kind of scared that that would happen again, and that would be another cause for concern, and then end in a C-section or something. There was a couple of like little scares, but I mean, they weren't my when once I saw my baby like here, I was like, no, it's just a bunch of like literally just a bunch of scares for kind of no reason, but you know, they have to monitor stuff. But one of them, like with the ultrasound, they found an EIF in his heart. And then, well, I didn't know what the heck that was, so that scared me. But his heartbeat was real strong, so they're like, "No, that's nothing to be like concerned about or anything." And once he's here, like the pediatricians will check him out and everything, but it's nothing to be like concerned about. So that they found that, and then in another ultrasound, he was telling me that the lower extremities weren't matching up with the upper extremity, so that scared like the poop out of me. I was like, "Oh my God, like my baby like has these two things." So I was like real scared that he was gonna have like some type of like just something wrong with him. So, but no, like nothing really. He told me, and I would ask a lot of questions. I'd be like, "Whoa, what are these things that you found, and what could that mean?" And he's like, "Honestly, like it's really nothing to worry about. It we're just gonna keep monitoring you." And he had sent me to a specialist, so I would go get my ultrasounds with them. And then also they were like, you're just super tiny, like not super tiny, but like you're really small, so there's not a lot of room in there for him," because they were kind of seeing that his foot was like real squished, so they were afraid that it was gonna be like he was gonna be born with like clubbed foot or something. But just a bunch of like little scares that I was like, "Oh my God, like this is like crazy." But they always reassured me to like don't worry, if anything comes out like not wrong, but like if he does come out with that, like it could be corrected, like just always reassuring me as well. So those were just the only little scares that we really had. But overall, my pregnancy was pretty healthy, no high blood pressure, nothing, none of that. And then when it came closer to like my due date, which was September 28th, he was kind of asking me again, like, okay, so you still want to go through with the VBAC? And I was like, of course I do. And then he's like, do you want to like wait for your body to kind of go into labor on its own, or do you want me to induce you? And well, me being me, like, I just kind of wanted to go through all that like naturally, you know, kind of let my body do its thing, because like I know my body can do it. But he was like, my son was just kind of comfortable in there in a sense. I don't know. I know a lot of women like go into labor a little bit early, around 38 weeks. So at like 38 weeks, I was just like, okay, like you can come out now. Like I was getting really uncomfortable. Everything was like aching. So I was just like, I really don't want to be induced though, because I also knew from my research, because I did a lot of research. I listened to this podcast too, like so much. So, and I felt at the time like, if I can go into labor naturally, like I'll have a better like success, like with having my VBAC. Like I know I could like do it. And like the induction part scared me, because I was like, I don't want anything to counteract with each other, like the Pitocin and then the epidural and all that. Like that just kind of, I was like, no, I was kind of being not negative in a sense, but weighing the risks out in my own head. But I was kind of overthinking it too, in a sense. But like when that time came, he was like, all right. He would do like towards the end, the exams, like cervical exams, I think, to see if I was dilated or not. And I was only like at 38 weeks a centimeter dilated, so and I stayed like that till 39 weeks. And then, well, I think maybe even at 37 weeks I was already a centimeter. And then I was hoping like maybe I could, you know, dilate more, and then by the time like, you know, my due date comes, which was the 28th of September, maybe I'll be, you know, ready to go. But no, like I said, he was just real comfortable in there. So by the 20, I think it was the 27th of, yeah, it was the 27th of September, I had my last doctor's appointment, and he was like, all right, well, if you want me to induce you, I can induce you. But if, I forgot what he said. He's like, if you want to wait for your body to go into labor naturally, I'm gonna be out of town. I was like, oh, I was so like disappointed, like, what do you mean you're gonna be out of town? That type of thing. Like, and he's like, if you do wait for your body to go into labor naturally, then there's a chance. He's like, you'll have the doctors here at one of the like local hospitals. It's Del Sol. Like, you'll have one of those doctors, but your chances of having a C-section, like, they go up higher, because, you know, he's like, because it's not me. Like, he stated again, I have a 90, I think it's a 95% rate of VBAC like success. So I was like thinking and thinking, but he told me, he's like, go ahead and think it over, like talk with your family about it, and just let me know what you want to do. Give us a call. But I do want you to go and be monitored, because he didn't really mention why for me to go to the hospital to be monitored. Like, he wanted me to get a sonogram, and then I forgot what else it was, but he wanted me to go into the hospital to get monitored. And I was like, oh, okay. He's like, I think it was for the next day. So I think it was actually the 26th that my appointment was. And then so on the 27th, I had to go to the hospital to be monitored either way. And then they made it like a point to me. They're like, but you need to go. Like, you need to go to the hospital to be for just for that sonogram or whatever. And I was like, okay. Like, I thought it was kind of weird, but I was like nervous too. I was like, okay, whatever, I'm gonna go. And then I ended up going, got myself admitted and everything. They hooked me up to the machines. They checked me, like a cervical exam. I was still at a centimeter. The baby's heartbeat was doing good. They came in and did the ultrasound. And then they were like, "Oh, like you're having contractions, you don't feel them?" And I was like, "No, not really. I really didn't feel them because I guess I had been feeling them for like weeks on end. Like my stomach would tighten." And again, I didn't know what they felt like really, just because with my past, I had C-section. So I was like, "No, this is like all new to me. I don't even know what contractions even feel like." I just thought like the tightening of the stomach, that obviously I knew it was something, but I thought it was like, you know, like, oh, those are Braxton Hicks contractions, like they're fine, they're fine. But like they, I guess they were coming on pretty strong, but they were just like that for a long time. They didn't hurt or anything. It just, my stomach was like super tight. So with every contraction, they'll be like, "Oh, you didn't feel that? You didn't feel that? Okay, well." They ended up telling me, "We are going to keep you overnight just because you are contracting a lot." And the doctor, they ended up telling me, I guess, like the doctor sent you in because he wanted us to check your amniotic fluid. So I guess he didn't have a lot of amniotic fluid in there. So that's why they wanted me to go in. So I ended up staying the night. And then the next day, that's when they were like, "Okay, so do you want us to induce you?" Actually, I think it was on the 27th that I did go in, because I ended up staying the night. And then the next day, that's when they were asking me. And I mean, I was just like, "Okay, like I guess, honestly," because a lot of factors kind of played into that. My mom was coming in from out of town, from California over here. My mom and my sister, so, and I wanted them to be here. And if I would have waited, you know, my thing was, if I wait to go into labor naturally and my mom and sister come down and like nothing happens, they have to go back and like they would miss the whole like birth and everything, and they wouldn't be able to see, you know, my son. So I was kind of weighing out all the options, and I ended up like agreeing to be induced. So, like around 11 on the 28th, that's when they started like Pitocin. And then another thing that I thought was like he didn't really mention this to me, or I probably should have asked too, that when he is doing the induction, it's one of his, I guess, like policies that he has, that he would prefer to just have the epidural like put. 'Cause I kind of had it in my mind, like, I want to try it without, you know, the epidural, but I want it to be there too. Like, if I do end up like giving in and being like, "Oh, well, this is a little bit too much pain for my comfort," like, you know. Like I have that option if I wanted to get it or not. But he had mentioned before, my doctor had mentioned, like, you can have the epidural put in, but like with no medicine, like none of the medicine. And I was like, okay. So when the time came, they were like, "Oh, well, we can't start the Pitocin without the epidural placed in first, just 'cause." And I guess it was for that reason, like just because if anything were to go like wrong or anything, and I would need a emergency C-section, like that was already placed, you know, so they wouldn't have to put me out like completely, and I would miss the whole birth, you know. So I was like, okay, like all right, you guys can place in. And then once they did, they're like, "No, we're gonna have to run at least just a little bit of like the epidural." And I was like, "What the heck?" Like, I thought nothing had to be like no medicine had to go through or anything. And they're like, "Well, yeah, we kind of do, just because if we don't, like there's a chance for it to be like a clot, and then we would have to place it all over again." And they're like, "And I don't necessarily think like that's exactly what you want." I'm like, honestly, like no, but like okay. But I just kind of was a little shocked to me. I was like, "Oh, okay." So, and that's not what I wanted. I wanted to be able to like kind of get up and like walk around, like kind of push through the labor in that sense, and the contractions in that sense. Because I feel like they would have been more tolerable, the contractions, if I was able to move around. But once the Pitocin started kicking in and like the contractions came on, like at first they were okay. I was like laughing with my mom and my sister because they did come in. They had just gotten there and we were just talking and my husband was there too. Like we were all just kind of laughing. Like, it was a nice like little beginning to the labor and filled with like a lot of like laugh. But once I was enabled to like laugh through nothing, I just kind of wanted to focus and like for everyone to like just like not even like talk. I was like, oh, this is intense. I would have preferred to be up and moving around and stuff, but that was not the case, which I kind of expected to before I had went in. Like you can't really plan for things to go your way exactly, because there's always going to be something that ends up not going your way. So I was just going with the flow type of thing, like whatever happens, happens, it's for a reason, you know? So the Pitocin was definitely kicking in and was I was contracting, and then I wasn't really dilating like fast. Like they didn't really want to do cervical checks like a lot, but because of like bacteria, but my water wasn't broken yet. So I think I was at like one still. They checked and they were like, oh, you're at two, and then oh, you're at two still. And then the doctor ended up coming in himself, and then he ended up breaking my water. But like he didn't really necessarily ask or anything. It was just the type of, okay, I'm gonna check you, and then okay, we're gonna break the water. I was like, oh my God, what the heck? What do you mean, like break my water, like right here, right now? Like it was kind of shocking too, but I was just kind of like, okay, like if this is what's needed to progress the labor, then like just go with it, you know, in a sense. But I was just like, nobody even asked me. Like that was kind of like rude. I'm not really, but I was just like, that's so weird that he came and just broke my water. And then after that, honestly, things started getting more intense. The contractions were very intense, and I wasn't able to get up or anything. I could feel them because I didn't want them to pump any more than like three. I don't know what it is, but like three. I don't know if it's milliliters, whatever, of the epidural. And I wasn't pressing that button or anything. Like I just wanted to do it like without it as much as possible. But I could really feel everything. So once the water was broke, I was just kind of like, okay, this is really it. And then there was a peanut ball there, so I was like, get the peanut ball. I mean, let's try to put it in between my legs and let's see if it does anything. So we did that, and it really, really made things like worse for me just because it was not comfortable at all. Like the pain was bad, but it ended up like opening me up more, like dilating me more, and pretty faster too. But it was very, very uncomfortable, and I would have to like switch like positions, kind of like just kind of lay on one side and then lay on my other side. Like I felt all the contraction pain, like just in my back, like towards my butt in a sense. Like it just felt intense. So, and I'm just grateful I was even able to experience that, just because like I didn't feel anything with my other ones. You just kind of feel just cold in a sense with the C-section, and like tugging and pulling, and just it was a weird experience with them. They weren't really like traumatic or anything for me, thank God, but like it's just like wasn't what I wanted. So to even be feeling all of the like labor pains and all that, like I was just like so grateful to even be there and experiencing that as like a woman. So that was it was kind of it was pretty exciting for me, but like I said, things didn't really necessarily play out the way I was like envisioning, like, or I like wanted it like to the T, but I was able to just experience all of the other things. And then they would do like cervical exams, and they would Once I was at like a like eight or whatever, that's when I was like, okay, like this is, I'm getting more and more like closer, because I was afraid that I wasn't even going to dilate and I would just have to end up getting a C-section. But I was dilating, and then once he came in, because I guess the nurses were like, no, yeah, baby's talking to me, like he's letting us know and he's moving down, and he's gonna come out. The one of the nurses was like, he's gonna be out by the end of my shift, watch guys. And we were just like looking at her like, okay, like if you say that, okay, like let's see. And yeah, like eventually, I want to say it was around like 5 o'clock, that's when, like 5:30, that's when I finally, I think I reached like 10 centimeters, and that's when the doctors came in. They started getting everything ready, and then I was like, oh my God, I think it's time to push. But, and I felt my body too. My body felt like if I needed to go to the restroom, like if I needed to poop. So I was like, oh my God, like I feel like that. And they've told me before, they're like, if you feel like you need to poop, then like you need to push, like let us know. And then I was like, yeah, like I do. And so my husband calls them, and he's like, yeah, she says she feels like she needs to poop. And then they're like, okay, yeah. So that's when he came in, all the nurses too, and then like they started getting everything ready. And then I want to say I started pushing, and he told me, he's like, it's literally gonna feel like you have to use the restroom, so like don't hold back or anything, like just push. So I was like, okay. And so I think after like 4 or 5 times like pushing my son, I could feel him like come out. So the head first, it came out, and then finally like the rest of the body. And I was just like I had that huge like relief of like, oh my God, like I cannot even believe that I just did that. Like I did it. And even though all these doctors would tell me like, no, like you're too small, like there's no way, like I actually did it. And I didn't even, he's like, no lacerations, no nothing, like I didn't tear or anything, like it was just unbelievable. Because I had the biggest fear too of like, oh my God, I'm like gonna tear like two holes into like one, like this, there's no way I'm gonna like not tear at all. So but I didn't end up tearing or anything, which was like good, because I know that's additional like kind of like recovery in a sense. But after a couple pushes, he was out, and I was just so happy. I was crying. My mom was crying because she was in the room with me, and my sister was in the room with me. She was holding one leg. My husband was holding the other one, and just like there was just tears everywhere. So it was really, really nice to actually experience that for this birth. And I feel like a lot of women too like can relate, like once you finally do that, after people saying like no, like you can't, or not even giving you a chance to try, like it was very, very rewarding and a completely different experience to a C-section. I'm just very like grateful that I found this doctor, and that he actually like took me on and was like, oh yeah, like you'll be fine, like we'll do this, you can do this. It was really nice. So my son was born, he was only 6 pounds 8 ounces, and so he wasn't like a really big baby either. So like but still, like I was very like a petite woman myself, so I was like, I thought it was gonna be challenging, but it was good. I didn't have any problems, no nothing, and he was born very, very healthy. And even all the nurses too, they were really excited. They're like, oh my God, she's a VBAC, like, and she actually did it. And I kept hearing that from like the course of my, the end of the course of my stay, like they were just like, oh, you did a VBAC, like that's so amazing, like congratulations and this and that. And I was like, it was just so nice to hear. And the recovery, oh my God, so much better than a C-section, like just 100 times better. Because I was able to get up after the epidural like had wore off, I was able to get up. Because I, after like those contractions started getting really intense, I was pressing that button. I was like, you know what? I need more of the epidural. Like, there's no way. These Pitocin contractions were just like, I know they're more intense than natural contractions than they really were. So I did only bump up myself to like from 3 mL to like 6, I think. So I didn't really like feel so much pain, but like I could still feel, things. So after the epidural like wore off, yeah, I was able to get up and walk. And it was nice. It was really nice to get up and do things, not have to have that pain of a C-section and leave the hospital after just a day. Like the very next day, we were able to leave by like 5, 6 o'clock, and then I was able to go home and, just enjoy my baby, and yeah, that was pretty much it. But I was very grateful for the experience.
I love that story. That's such an incredible and inspiring story. There's so many things that I could talk about, but we're running a little short on time. And so I kind of want to talk about two things: the small pelvis, the myth of the small pelvis, and preeclampsia, right? So first, I know that preeclampsia is really tricky because it's very like the induction is necessary where preeclampsia is one of the things where you need to get the baby out sooner rather than later. It's a medically indicated thing. If you have a doctor telling you that, you don't have to question it or worry about it because it's really important to get that baby here quickly. However, there are instances where an induction may be appropriate compared to just going to a straight to a C-section. And again, provider preference is going to play a huge deal into that, but also as long as your blood pressure is holding steady through an induction and you're progressing well and mom and baby are doing fine, then an induction can be a safe option as well for preeclampsia. So the biggest thing they're just going to make sure is the stress of the induction is not too much on your body, because sometimes your blood pressure will go up just naturally with labor because it's a lot of work. But as long as you keep an eye on that, I think it's, I mean, I don't think, I know that it's a reasonable option at times. So don't think that having preeclampsia just means you automatically have to go to a C-section. But again, talk about your options with your provider. If your provider is not telling you something that you feel comfortable with, question it, seek out another opinion, but definitely trust your intuition and lean into that. I think that if you've been around with us for long enough, you will know that how we feel about the idea of somebody's pelvis being too small. Now, I think it's really sad. I think maybe sad's not the right word, but I feel like with teenage pregnancies, these teenagers who arguably need more help than most, because teenage pregnancies are oftentimes unplanned and unexpected. They're in a very vulnerable situation. They need more help, more guidance, but I feel like oftentimes the system will take advantage of that vulnerability and maybe probably even unknowingly, but I feel like it's very easy for teenagers in the system, at a hospital system, to get railroaded more because they haven't gone through a lot of the experiences that we do later on in life and learn how to navigate through trickier situations and stand up for ourselves and advocate. And it's harder and more challenging. And so I'm really sorry that that happened to you and your provider used her vaginal exam to determine your pelvis is too small. Now, let me tell you, there's only one way to determine an actual pelvis size, and that's with a pelvic telemetry scan. It's kind of like an X-ray. A vaginal exam is not evidence-based. And not only that, there's so much more that goes into a pelvis being too small because pelvises move and flex as a baby's being born. Our baby's head squeeze and mold in order to fit through the pelvis. And so even a pelvis that might be quote unquote too small before pregnancy can change and shift and expand and grow as, through the pregnancy, but especially as labor happens. So it's very, very rare for a pelvis to be actually too small or deformed. And usually that happens when a mother grows up either incredibly malnourished and their bones are not able to grow in properly, or through like a traumatic injury to the pelvic area, are usually the biggest or the most likely times where you'll see a pelvis that is truly too small. A lot of times it's failure to wait. Maybe the body's just not ready for maybe a too early induction, things like that. So I would encourage you to ask questions and trust your intuition. We do have a blog all about CPD, which is cephalopelvic disproportion, that we're going to link into the show notes. And that just basically means, it's fancy words for saying your pelvis is too small, or maybe your baby's too big to fit through the size of your pelvis as it is. But I'm so glad that Ambrosia was able to stand up for herself and find a provider that would support her in getting a VBAC after two C-sections. So I'm very proud of you. And thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Thank you so much.
Interested in sharing your VBAC? Head over to thevbaclink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Hey everybody, I just wanted to take a quick sec to thank you all so much for listening to today's episode. We are so glad that you are here. This community is near and dear to our heart. We love you all so much. If you enjoyed today's episode, we would really appreciate it if you'd leave us a rating and review. Our whole team here at the VBAC Link actually gets to see these reviews come in, and it makes our day. A 5-star rating helps us share our podcast and gets these important messages out there. Thank you so much for listening, and we cannot wait to see you next time.